Well, today, Turkey's Prime Minister, Recep Erdogan, says he will go ahead with plans to build on Gezi Park and Taksim Square in Istanbul, despite nationwide protests. The protests began in the park, where a few activists tried to save trees from a bulldozer. Police reacted violently with water hoses, setting tents on fire. The protests escalated to the point that now a cross-section of the country has joined in. But what do they want? Well, many are angry at what they say is the arrogance of the prime minister, a popular, democratically elected leader of a secular state touted as a moderate Muslim. His critics say Erdogan has grown autocratic, especially since his Islamist party's last huge win in 2011, that he's, for instance, trying to restrict alcohol. Let's get one Turk's perspective. Dr. Tuba Tanyera Erdemir is Director of Science and Technology Museum and lecturer in the graduate program in architectural history at the Middle East Technical University in the capital, Ankara. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you.
So you've been going to the protests in Ankara. Are you at all afraid? People have been severely wounded. Are you laughing?
Yes, I am. Actually, I'll just tell you what it is like. Before we go out to protest, you should take a water-resistant pen and write your blood type somewhere on your body, preferably visible, like your arm. You should always have something like a mask and swimming goggles to protect your eyes and make sure that you will be unaffected by tear gas. Some of these protests are very empowering, that you are in the streets with thousands of people feeling the exact same way that you are feeling, and there is a very optimistic mood in the air. But then again, when the police intervenes in much greater numbers and with excessive, brutal use of tear gas, water cannons, and plastic, plastic bullets, the whole thing becomes very scary. One of my friends who was actually trapped in an apartment building and the police was shooting tear gas canisters inside the building, described it as kind of like a near-death experience, that he could not literally breathe for a couple of minutes.
Well, look, the Deputy Prime Minister has apologized for that very first police action in the park where people were trying to save trees. But he also went on to say he will not apologize to people destroying property, preventing other people from being on the streets, that there are extremists involved, that foreigners might be involved as well. What do you say to that, that the peaceful protest is one thing, but are there people who have other motives?
Whenever you get about 40,000 people in the street in a city, you will get some way, shape, or form some problems. Yes, there were provocateurs, and they have been identified. Yes, there were cases in which some property was destroyed. Not all of these cases were done on purpose, though. You know, people try to shield themselves in places. It's a very, how should I say, chaotic situation in which things, including people, do get damaged. The latest numbers that I've looked at, there seems to be over 4,000 people injured, and we're talking about serious injuries here, broken bones, cracked skulls. 10 people lost their eyes because tear gas canisters hit them in the head. So we were a little bit concerned by Deputy Prime Minister's apology. I felt that I needed an apology as well for the bodily harm that I have received in the hands of the police, just tear gas. But a lot of my friends have been subjected to worse.
Yeah.
My husband was actually trapped in a building with a mother and a three-year-old kid. I think that three-year-old kid deserves a much better apology.
And take us through, when did you become aware of this first protest? We understand four men who stood in front of these trees in a park in Istanbul to protect them from this bulldozer. When did you first become aware of that protest and how it grew?
I actually was aware of it very early on, because the initial warning to many people was done through social media. So I was aware of a very small group of protesters gathered in Gezi Park on the 27th of May.
And of course, this would be something that you would be concerned about. Here you are, a lecturer in architectural history. Give us some context here, because we understand that part of the anger comes from the fact that there's been a lot of reconstruction going on under the direction of the prime minister. Draw the line from democratic rights, because we know there are other complaints. Draw the line from a park being demolished to make way for a mall to democratic rights being violated.
A lot of people feel that they want to preserve certain things in their lives and in their cities. Just 2 weeks before this incident, for instance, there was one of these 19th century beautiful cinemas, which is in a nearby neighborhood to this park we're talking about. It was demolished despite significant public opposition, protest walks, which actually were again tear gassed and attacked by water cannons just about 2 or 3 weeks ago. There were significant protests against the demolishment of a monumental sculpture in eastern Turkey, for instance, just about 2 years ago. And despite, you know, very clear public demand to keep that sculpture there, the prime minister said he found it freakish, and then we watched it get beheaded and demolished. So we're, a lot of the people in Turkey feel that even though we would like to change things, we don't have the outlets to have any control over our lives. So this latest event, which started with a very small group of protesters just camping in a park, kind of signified to us a lot of these things that we cannot control in our lives anymore. Before that, there were also protests against many other things. I am a member of a university which is known for its progressive nature, and on our campus we find it natural and we do like our students to voice their opinions in the form of, you know, peaceful protests. And over the last 6 months, all of us, including me, myself, faculty, our students, my little daughter who goes to the primary school of our campus, cats, dogs, everyone, we've been tear gassed 3 times because of protests taking place on our campus.
So it sounds as if the trees and the parks and the iconic landmarks that are being demolished have become metaphor for what you see as maybe an eroding of some of your democratic rights.
That's actually a very accurate way of looking at this.
That's Dr. Tuba Tanyeri Ardemir in Ankara. When we come back, are the protests in Turkey against an autocratic leader or against his Muslim faith? That's in 1 minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation about what's driving the protests in Turkey. We're talking with Dr. Tuba Tanyeri Ardemir. She's with the Middle East Technical University in Ankara. Turkey, officially a secular state, but the governing Conservative Justice and Development Party has deep Islamist roots. They've won 3 elections. Their strongest standing came in the last one in 2011. So, Doctor, let's pick up. You say that the government has become authoritarian, trampling democratic rights. Others are seeing a deepening Islamist secular divide. Islamists in particular fearful. They say this is a legitimately elected government. It still enjoys strong support with a majority in the parliament. Are protests because secularists like yourself just don't like this democratically elected Islamist government?
No, actually, this is a very interesting moment in Turkish history. A lot of these people who are protesting, they have made this organization to collect a special type of bagel that you distribute on religious holidays.
A bagel.
It's called kandil simidi. So people have collected boxes of these things, the protesters, and they're distributing it to the public.
Just to underscore what you just said, secularists handing out bagels to people, I'm presuming Muslims, who are celebrating a holiday as sort of a gesture of affinity.
Actually, all of them celebrating the holiday together, which I think is even more important.
Yeah.
And for the first time in the very polarized Turkish context, we are seeing different groups being much closer to each other. There is, for instance, a group called anti-capitalist Islamists who are parts of this protest. There are women in headscarves. There are people who had formerly voted for the Justice and Development Party in this protest. So it's too simplistic to look at it as a secular Islamist divide. There is a lot of camaraderie. Being someone who is devout or Islamist does not necessarily mean that you would like to give your democratic rights away. So the divide is, at the moment, somewhere else, I think.
So, Doctor, where do you see this going? Is it about one man who many people think is taking too much power? Is it about the prime minister?
A lot of us feel that way, that there is a lot of centralization of power and authority in the hands of one man, and a lot of us feel that our lives and our choices are kind of dependent on whatever comes out of his mouth. We don't necessarily think that that is a good way to live our lives in, because we are believers in democracy and we would like to defend our individual rights and freedoms.
There are many Islamist Turks that we're hearing from who are resentful of these protests. They say at one time the Prime Minister, Mr. Erdogan himself, was jailed for reciting a poem with religious overtones that was not allowed at one time, that he's actually made the democratic government that Turkey celebrates now.
There are actually those who don't support the protests. That is true. This is also within democratic rights, that you may or may not be of a certain opinion, and we should value that. As for your other question, that Erdogan was seen as a more liberal politician in the past, but this has taken a very significant turn after June 2011, after the elections, that he has actually cleaned a lot of the social democratic wing within his party. Those who have a lot more of a liberal voice are actually eliminated, and the ruling party is left with his voice only. Even though certain things, such as the process that was leading into Turkey's membership into EU, things like that had increased certain democratic things within the country, that did not continue.
Well, we should disclose that your husband, Aykan Erdemir, is a member of the opposition party in parliament.
That is true.
That is true. And some could say that the opposition party failed in its own way, because obviously it's Erdogan's party that won in the elections.
Now, let me tell you why I let my husband become a politician in the first place. I'm the mother of two small children, and my husband was also an academic in the same university, and we had a very good life, and, you know, he was a very happy academician. But our lives in Turkey came to such a moment that me as a woman, I was worried for the future of my two girls. So I wholeheartedly supported my husband's entry into politics, just because I was worried for my own rights and freedoms, but I was seeing the future as a very dark place for my girls.
If the Islamist government starts making requirements of women?
Just to give you a couple of examples, the Prime Minister repeatedly said in public speeches that he did not believe men and women were created equal. His Minister of Economy, I believe, had uttered the words, "Turkish economy is going so well that we don't even need women to work." Just about a year ago, they were trying to pass a bill restricting abortion rights for females and also banning C-sections in certain contexts, which is a direct control over women's bodies. Things like that give us a very interesting picture. It's not necessarily framed as an Islamist government, but definitely a mindset that has strong misogynist tones within the society.
And so this is part of your concern as well. Again, just one last thought in reaction to that, as this is the thought that would come from Islamist Turks. They would say, well, for years, religious women were forbidden by law to wear headscarves in Turkey. So they know that kind of hardline restriction.
That's absolutely true, I think. And we are of the opinion that grown-up adult women should not be told what to wear, what to do, how to take care of her body. That's probably why a lot of our headscarved friends are with us in the streets protesting.
That's Dr. Tuba Tanyere Erdemir. She's director of Science and Technology Museum and lecturer in the graduate program in architectural history at the Middle East Technical University in Turkey, and has been participating in protests there. Doctor, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Of course, we'll follow this story, and as we head into the news, we have an update on another one. A judge has ruled that Sarah Murnaghan, the dying 10-year-old we heard about last week, can move up the adult waiting list for a lung transplant. Of course, a match still has to be found, but we'll keep you updated on this story as well. The rest of the news is next, here and now.